This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Last night at the debates, there was some rather interesting moments of Bernie Sanders accusing Jake Tapper of pushing Republican talking points. What did he do? What did Jake Tapper do that was so bad? He was literally asking some pointed questions about the Medicare for All scheme that Bernie Sanders is pushing, a socialized version of healthcare in this country. And part of the problem of all of his plan has to do with tens of millions of people. Tens of millions of people end up losing their health insurance regardless of whether or not they want to lose their health insurance. On top of that, of course, jobs go away. Another part of this plan that Bernie Sanders, the wannabe president, doesn't talk about. And he got a little feisty last night.
What I am talking about and others up here are talking about is no deductibles and no co-payments. And Jake, your question is a Republican talking point. At the end of the day, and by the way, the healthcare industry will be advertising tonight on this program.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Warren, it's your turn.
Oh, can I complete that, please?
Your time is up. 30 seconds.
They will be advertising tonight with that talking point.
Oh, okay. It's not a talking point. It's a legitimate criticism and concern of your plan. You are proposing something that is legitimately going to cost people the health insurance that they like to go into a system that's not going to serve them. His comeback to that is kind of weird.
The fact of the matter is, tens of millions of people lose their health insurance every single year when they change jobs, when their employer changes that insurance.
Hey, dummy, you do realize that people then go and get different private health insurance that they can choose from when they go to another job. You do know that you don't permanently lose your health care coverage, your insurance, when you go to another job, right? It's not like, oh, you get it one time. If you ever get fired or leave that job, you never can get it again. Do they not realize that? That's such a bad talking point.
If you want stability in the healthcare system, if you want a system which gives you freedom of choice with regard to doctor or hospital.
But that's also not true. Remember the whole idea of Obamacare, which was one step closer to this kind of scheme of socialized medicine? He said, President Obama at the time, if you want your health insurance, you can keep your health insurance. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. That was a lie. It was the biggest whopper of the year, according to the Washington Post. And what Bernie Sanders is doing is lying to you.
Which is a system which will not bankrupt you. The answer is to get rid of the profiteering of the drug companies and the insurance companies. Move to Medicare for all.
By the way, is it possible for him to not always shout into the microphone when giving an answer? Spittle coming up both sides of his mouth. It's just, he sounds like a crazy person when he does this. And maybe he's doing it to show that he's energized because he's an older person. And there's certainly, I think, valid concerns over his age and whether or not he's going to be there mentally to run this country if he were to become president. He's just always shouting. Always. There's no like, let's have a serious conversation about this in a meaningful way. It's not that. It's like, the health insurance companies, they are the devil. They are the worst. Our country is turning into a fascistic city and state and country overall because of that bigot, that racist, Donald Trump. It's just, okay, relax. Now, the good news is last night, John Delaney was there. Not someone I back, but someone who's certainly a moderate. And again, we said that this was kind of positioned, whether on purpose or not, moderates versus progressive socialists like Bernie Sanders. And Delaney was there to say, look, your plan is not a good one. It is too extreme.
Listen, his math is wrong. That's all I'm saying. That his math is wrong. It's been well documented that if all the bills were paid at Medicare rate, which is specifically, I think it's in section 1200 of their bill, then many hospitals in this country would close. I've been going around rural America, and I ask rural hospital administrators one question. If all your bills were paid at the Medicare rate last year, what would happen? And they all look at me and say, we would close. But the question is, why do we have to be so extreme? Why can't we just give everyone health care as a right and allow them to have choice?
That seems like a fair middle ground from a Democratic perspective. That sounds like a fair middle ground. We're guaranteeing you a right to health care and health care coverage. When he says health care, he really means health insurance. And on top of that, we're allowing the private market to exist, so we're not taking away something from you that you might like. That's a reasonable position in response, or compromise, I suppose, in response to the craziness that Bernie Sanders is supporting. And he is absolutely right about this plan being financially untenable. You cannot sustain that. You cannot get rid of people who are paying a lot of money into an insurance plan and then getting it transferred to an actual doctor's office or a hospital. If you just guarantee that it's going to be free. Now, I know they want to pretend that they can do this without raising taxes and that only the super wealthy are going to back this. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works at all. Here's Elizabeth Warren taking the position of, oh, we're not going to raise taxes on you.
Thank you, Senator.
Medicare for all will fix that, and that's why I'll
fight
for it.
Thank you, Senator. Just a point of clarification in 15 extra seconds. Would you raise taxes on the middle class to pay for Medicare for all? Offset, obviously, by the elimination of insurance premiums. Yes or no?
Costs will go up for billionaires and go up for corporations. For middle-class families, costs, total costs, will go down.
That is absolute nonsense, and she knows it. In fact, progressives who get a thrill going up their legs, like Chris Matthews over at MSNBC, even he knows that what she's saying is just not true and not plausible. And he pushed her over and over and over again to admit that after the debates last night.
You guys dodged that tonight.
It's about
Shane Tapper kept saying, how much of your tax is going to go up? And you'd said,
much are your costs going to go down?
No, different question. How much will your taxes go up?
No, it's how much are your costs? Because it's how much families end up spending.
I know that argument.
You know, the Republicans did a study, and hoped to show that Medicare for All was going to bust the budget. And you remember what it ended up showing? That Medicare for All is cheaper than our current system. That's the Republicans.
I know the argument that you put it all together, you reduce the cost for health care premiums, and you get more benefits, and therefore you come out ahead. But will you pay more in taxes? Why don't you want to answer that question?
Because
Jake said tonight, that's a Republican talking point. It's not a Republican talking
point.
It's
a question about where people are going to come out economically.
That's not my question.
And by the way, this is really next level spin. Because what she's trying to say is, yes, your taxes are going to go up, but you will be spending less on healthcare as a result. And so at the end of the day, you're going to be saving more. Now, the reason why she doesn't specifically point it out that way, because number one, it's always bad to say taxes are going up. And number two, she knows that still would also be a lie. Because for the vast majority of people, unless you happen to be very sickly, right, and you're going to the doctor all the time and you've got a lot of emergencies, the cost saving isn't there the way she thinks it is. Because she wants to pretend that we've got billions of billionaires who are going to be able to pay for this, and we don't.
My question is how much will taxes go up?
I spent most of my life studying families that went broke, and a huge chunk of them went broke because of high medical bills, and many of them had health insurance.
She does not want to answer that question.
So the question is not, do you have health insurance or not have health insurance? The question is, how much are you going to have to dig in your pocket to pay?
I know that's the answer that you'd like to give, but
the question is your total cost.
Okay, but there's no answer to the question with your taxes.
There is an answer to the question about your costs.
How about taxes?
Because it's costs that
matter.
She's going
to kick them at some point, right?
I'm not getting anywhere. Let me ask you about this.
I love that. We're not getting anywhere, so we're just going to move on. Now, under Sanders' plan, which is virtually the exact same thing as what Elizabeth Warren is proposing, he at least admits that you're paying 4% more in taxes. That's the number that he puts out there. Now that the Urban Institute comes out and says, whoa, let's go with this whole idea of a 4% increase on taxes across the board for anyone making more than $29,000, households at least making more than $29,000, that's not covering what you think it's going to cover. That's not covering your plan. And so if 4% is still too low, let's go with 10%. Do you want to spend 10% more right now? Because, again, she's pretending that all families are exactly the same. That right now you're all spending the exact same amount of money on health insurance, on healthcare in general, and you're going to get some sort of savings. But, of course, there are lots of people who almost never go to the doctors, for example, because they don't get sick. Well, they're going to end up spending more. They're going to get taxed higher because they have to get taxed higher in order to subsidize socialized medicine for every single person in this country, plus people who are here illegally. What was the big thing about Obamacare? How would that stay financially solvent? You needed people who were younger, 25, 26, 27-year-olds, paying into the system and not actually using the system. Because generally, people who are in their early 20s into their mid-30s are healthier, don't go see the doctor as much. That's part of the reason why a lot of young millennials don't end up getting insurance at all prior to Obamacare. They needed to collect the money from them or the taxes from them to go into the system to pay for the people who are sick all the time. It's... Producer Rob, this is going to kill me. This is going to kill me. How stupid these people are. 1-800-465-8770. By the way, for any of you who had a bet going, Jay Inslee did not take a knee during the national anthem. He did not take a knee during the national anthem. I can confirm that. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So let's talk about what's going on with the Seattle Sounders. Let's talk about the Sounders. Because they did something that... It's pretty cool, I think. And it's not having anything to do with what's going on the pitch. It has everything to do with the fact that they told a group of Antifa supporters to stop bringing their ridiculous political flag to the supporter section. And now, as a result of this, some fans might not show up to the game on Sunday. Good riddance. I don't need them there. At a recent game between the Sounders and the Portland Timbers, the Emerald City Supporters Group, ECS, they flew an iron front flag. It's a flag with three arrows pointing in the downward direction. And they say this is their way of fighting fascism because in their delusional heads, we live in a fascistic world in which the government under Nazi Donald Trump is trying to physically assault people so that they stop speaking out against him. Literal violent suppression of speech they claim is going on. Now, the Sounders noticed this and they said, whoa, 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 that's against the MLS fan code of conduct. And they said, you bring this flag again, we are not going to put up with it. Not only are we going to kick you out, but you're probably going to be suspended from your season tickets. And now the Antifa supporters, oh, they are mad. They are unhappy. They put out a statement over at ECS that no one should be oppressed or persecuted because of who they are. They go on to say, as with all things in life, no one should feel they can't attend a soccer match and support the club they love. Just like the Iron Front symbol, the Emerald City supporters stand for the oppressed and the persecuted. Only they literally think anyone who stands in the way of their political positions is a Nazi who needs to be pushed back upon, who needs to be silenced, who needs to get one of the Antifa thugs in their face. ECS is claiming that the symbol that they were showing up to the Sounders game is not political, which is, of course, wrong. Historically, it's wrong, and how it's being used right now is wrong. They just like the politics that flag represents. And that's the rub for the Sounders. They're saying essentially that this is a symbol that's been co-opted by dangerous Antifa groups who routinely use violence and threats of violence to achieve not just a political agenda, but to silence the opposition. We saw what happened to journalist Andy Ngo in Portland, who was severely beaten because he's a conservative. We saw what happened in Tacoma a few weeks ago. Police shot and killed an Antifa domestic terrorist after police said he was throwing incendiary objects at the detention centers. Members of Antifa routinely antagonize and assault police officers, commit acts of violence, commit acts of vandalism, and then when they arrested, they claim that they're the actual victims of the fascist pigs that they refer to as cops. But in this whole argument, the people who support Antifa, these losers right now online, on Twitter, who are so upset like children, not being allowed to buy a toy at the toy store, they've set up a world in which they present themselves as the heroes. They're fighting against fascism. Why are you so upset, Jason, that we're fighting against fascism? Because you literally think everyone who disagrees with you politically is a fascist. That's why. because you have no idea what the term actually means. Because if you set up a world in which you are the only person who can come out on the right side of history, you guys are insane. And I am so glad that right now you're pissed off that you don't get to support Antifa at a Sounders match. Because you know what? No one wants your damn politics in the stands during a game. This is not a political rally. This is a sporting event, and we should be able to attend without having to deal with your nonsense. You have all other spaces in Seattle to spout your nonsense, to spout your conspiracies, to spout your delusion. Leave us alone at CenturyLink. Now, if you, like me, kind of get excited when Antifa members are pissed off, there's something you can do to help. You want to ruin an Antifa member's day today? Like, literally, just because they will be consumed by this. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTS. And I'm going to send you a link to this story on this very topic. All you need to do is post it on Twitter or Facebook and hashtag Antifa. They will see. They will lose it. They will get so angry. I've spent the day looking at these tweets from these losers who think they're better than everybody else because they believe in their heads that they're fighting fascists that don't actually exist. Ruin their day with me. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. I'll go ahead and send you a link. Earlier when I did this, the phone lines blew up. The texting machine almost broke. So go ahead and do the same thing. RANTS to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the east side?
So an upscale brothel was busted by police in Bellevue, and they arrested a 36-year-old woman for suspected promotion of prostitution. Bellevue Police Captain Dan Sanbria told Como TV that this wasn't just a one-off issue. This was actually pretty significant.
This wasn't just a prostitute working on her own. She was kind of part of this larger organization.
So they say she was busted with $5,100 in her wallet, which detectives say was the proceeds from prostitution at the brothel in the 300 block of 108th Avenue Northeast. For those of you not familiar, I mean, this is a nice part of Bellevue, central Bellevue. It's next to the Sea Star restaurant, Expedia. You know, this is a good place, a nicer building we're talking about here, a nicer apartment building. Bellevue police say they found out that this was going on when a detective saw an ad online about the services offered, which seems really weird if you're trying to operate an illegal brothel. Maybe don't advertise it online. So the detective responded to get more details. They figured it out. They tracked the address down to an apartment complex.
The anonymity of apartment complexes, too, contribute to that problem. I mean, how well do you know your neighbors, you know, even if you're in the same hall?
I mean, okay, I don't know my neighbors, but I feel like I might know if they were operating an illegal brothel. Literally next door, I would be seeing a whole bunch of clientele walking in every single day. Like, I feel like we'd be able to figure that one out, but okay, fair enough. Detectives said a woman from China on a temporary visa told them she was being forced to work against her will, according to Como TV, and had been recruited through the social networking site WeChat, which I've never heard of. After working at the brothel for a short time, the woman said she tried to leave, but wasn't allowed to until she found her replacement. She said she was forced to see as many as 10 customers a day, bringing in up to $2,000 a day. The one question I have in all of this, is that really upscale? When they said an upscale brothel, I don't know why, but I assumed it was going to be in like a mansion or a very big home, a single family home, that would be really well decorated. The apartment seems fine. It didn't seem like an upscale apartment. And if you're seeing 10 people and making $2,000 in a day, that seems to be like the rates are not an upscale rate, right? Are they trying to, like...
I don't know the rates, so you tell me.
Well, so I know through... No, I have no idea, but 10 clients for $2,000, you can do the math. That's not a lot of money if you're upscale. If you say upscale, like a Vegas hotel, like go to the Bellagio or whatever, you're spending like $500 or $6 a night for a room, which is considerably less than what they're charging here in a shoddy apartment. It's just... It's an apartment. Does this count as a brothel? Again, is this a brothel? I'm glad they got the person. I'm hoping they make more arrests. Disgusting what these people are doing. This is sex trafficking, essentially. This is sex slaves. It's all disgusting. It doesn't seem upscale or a brothel. And so I'm wondering if part of this is just putting a little bit of extra information out there to go after the sex trade, which go ahead and do it. I just want to make sure we're talking about the same kind of thing and not just some woman who legitimately was doing something shady but not on this big, massive scale. Because if it's a big, massive scale, then I feel like there should be some urgency, if there isn't, to go ahead and put out information so we can try to get these bad people. 1-800-465-8770. To the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Seattleites are unhappy with the direction of the city, and chief among the issues is with council members who don't really make any meaningful effort to connect with the people and the businesses that they're supposed to represent. Deborah Juarez has a reputation of not being accessible and kind of rubber stamping insane policies that let homelessness get worse. On the other hand, just casually following one of their council opponents, you see someone actually engage with the community, taking time to listen to them, talk to them, and address their concerns. Ann Davison Sattler is an attorney. She's a mom, and she's someone who deeply cares about our community. She's running in District Number 5, which includes Lake City, Broadview, and Northgate, and she joins me now. Ann, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So what's the first thing people talk to you about when you connect with them over their concerns?
Well, first and foremost, most of the time, I'm the first and only candidate that they've ever met in their entire lives that's at their door, which I find really surprising because I don't really know why anybody else would do anything other than going door to door and actually talking to people. People are so thankful just to be heard. And even beyond just being a candidate, they're happy to have someone at their door who is wanting to connect on a personal basis about what's happening in their lives, where they are, because their lives are busy. Our culture is very busy and hectic, and so meeting people where they are, mm-hmm. people are very, very appreciative.
So Northgate and Lake City in particular seem, at least in this district, to have been disproportionately hit by homelessness. How should it be addressed by the council, and why do you think Councilmember Juarez is failing?
I think that you're right. Those two areas in particular have been very hardly hit with what is happening. And the lack of a direction is what has been what's missing the most. There's not really a concrete plan about what to do. It's just reactionary. After months of complaints about growing encampments, then the city eventually comes in. We had to deal with one at Lake City that was there for months and mm-hmm. had been relocated from someplace else. And once it was dispersed, it went to a vacant commercial private property lot, and then it was dispersed from there. I was just out at a park in Mineral Springs where, again, because they had cleared it off near the Northgate and I-5, now there were tents that were up in this public park. And there seems to be no plan. It just is continually to slowly respond, move people along, and nothing else for that. And I do feel like because we declared a state of emergency in 2015 on homelessness at the city and county level, that we should be giving it a proportional response. And so on my website, I have 3 designated locations as proposed ideas for emergency shelter so that we can get people off the street and into a location with needs assessment, organized first responders, and be better stewards of our tax dollars at the same time.
And the website, by the way, neighborsforann.com. There's no E in Ann, neighborsforann.com. Do you support the navigation team sweeps?
You know, I think that they are an important part of what we're doing, but they're not doing it effectively, and they're coming in too late. I think we need to have them, but we need to be putting them, having a place for people to go, right? They're coming in late after neighbors are already at this level of compassion fatigue, where they are have increased crime, they have increased litter, they have lost a sense of safety, they've lost the ability to go to the green public spaces that are supposed to be open for everyone, and they're fed up. And so by allowing that to fester, we are alienating the tax base at the same time and not providing care for those who are the most vulnerable and could be in these encampments. And we're allowing bad actors to thrive. So it really is critical that we move people out of random public camping places and have a location for them to go to. And that's what we're missing at the moment.
Yeah. And part of the issue, you know, and you hit the nail on the head in that there's not really any sense of urgency coming from the council on this. You've got a clear issue, years in the making. We've certainly seen this entire region take a turn about 3, 4, 5 years ago. And not only is it impacting folks who are living out on the streets, but it's also impacting the businesses that are dealing with this. We spoke with a business owner in West Seattle earlier today and how his business is being impacted. And so if you could talk a little bit about the impact this is having on the local economy, just to give a sense of what this is really about.
Yeah, it has been growing for years, and we've had experts tell us that we need to be forming a regional response, and that's just now in the making, several years delayed from when it was recommended to us to be doing that. So I feel like everyone who's had their time, and this is all increased on their watch, including the current council member I'm running against, and they have allowed this to continue over these years without any kind of a plan other than we need to build our way out of it. But what is happening in the interim? In the interim, what is happening is our local businesses, like you said, are being harmed. Their customer base are not wanting to frequent the locations because of what is going on outside. And the loss of business. I mean, I've spoken with someone who had a low-barrier encampment right next to their business, and he estimated losing about $10,000 a month in walk-in business. And right there on 99, and I went and helped clean up needles along that area, and I saw how bad it was while that was still there. And that was what we allowed to happen, the deterioration of local economy, small business, to where people are saying, why should I do this? Why should I maintain my business here when my tax dollars are not even providing me the service of litter cleanup, of safety, of law enforcement, and seeing that we're actually using the tax dollars to help people that are in need at the same time?
Just joining me, we're talking with Ann Davison Sattler. She is running for the Seattle City Council in District Number 5. Her website, by the way, neighborsforann.com, Ann spelled A-N-N, neighborsforann.com. Deborah Juarez, the current council member, and I feel like the city in general, I never hear them talking about a good portion of District Number 2. Maple Leaf never comes out of their mouth. Broadview never comes out of their mouth. How much of your district is just being forgotten?
Oh, there's so much that is being forgotten. In fact, a lot of the people that are running against her really just talk about Lake City. Like, that's just really kind of the main part of District 5. And there are really, really unforgotten areas that are just, they don't feel like they have a voice at the table. And people are, like I said, so busy in our culture and in our world of taking care of themselves, their family, their immediate needs, and don't have time to engage civically in the local politics of what's happening. But yet they have a huge level of frustration. And so that's why I feel like it is critical. This is the most hyper-local representation we can have in government. And we should be expecting more. It is not unreasonable to expect that every constituent who writes in to a district council member should receive an answer back, because it is the least number of constituents than any elected office. It is just unfathomable that that should be allowed or expected. So I really want to turn the idea of what local representation is on its head. And we should be out. I would be obliged to be out in District 5 talking to people where they are, like I said, living their lives, because they are the employers of the council members. It is not the other way around.
Do you get a sense that they, the council in general and Deborah Juarez specifically, do you think they're business friendly?
I don't think the council as a whole is particularly business friendly. I think there's a lot of lip service to that, but the head tax vote tells you where people stand. And if people try to talk their way out of their vote, you know, by claiming there's backdoor talks and they didn't support it in the backroom negotiations, you know, as the public, I find that offensive, because we only know what people think based on their vote. And that vote was a unanimous vote. And that is not supporting jobs, which is the backbone of our economy. We want to make sure we are inviting jobs, that we are keeping business here. Otherwise, you know, we are going to be crumbling as a city. So we have to keep business here.
You know, and beyond that, the council obviously takes on issues that are important to the entire region. And something that we noted is that you're one of, I think you're the only candidate so far that's come out with a pretty detailed position on supporting a stadium in Soto, a brand new stadium in Soto, rather than the Kia Arena renovation that just is not going to bring the Sonics back. This is obviously an issue that impacts a whole bunch of people outside of Seattle. Take us through. Do you still believe that the Soto Arena should happen?
I absolutely do. And I'm not against the Seattle Center one. Hockey can be great. And it's a fascinating sport. There's nothing about hockey and hockey fans in particular. My op-ed about that is particularly just focused on the financial dealings of those two transactions and why that deal was considered a good deal to accept, but yet why the Soto Arena proposal, which would be completely privately financed, and we as a city would just sit back and passively receive hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue, why that was not a good deal to say yes to, in addition to it being a definite step towards bringing the Sonics back.
Yeah,
that was a much better step for that.
Yes. Again, remember, Deborah Juarez was against that, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you go to neighborsforann.com. If you live in Seattle and you live in District Number 5, Ann is the one to vote for, in my opinion. If you do not live in this region, but you know specific people who live in District Number 5, make sure you're doing what you can to bring attention to Ann Sattler's campaign. Again, the website is neighborsforann.com. Ann Sattler, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Also, check out the Facebook page. We're really active on there. Also, it's Neighbors for Ann. I so appreciate the time, and thank you for focusing on our local issues, Jason.
Absolutely. Again, website neighborsforann.com. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. There was a moment just now during the Democratic debate on CNN where Jay Inslee was asked specifically about his health care plan that he championed here in Washington. We say he had almost nothing to do with it passing in Washington State. They got it passed due to the work of the Washington State Democrats, who had no opposition because of the amount of seats that they have in Olympia. But Jake Tapper noted just now that you just passed a plan that only provides maybe savings of 5%. Is that what people are looking for? And he said, no, that's why I support universal health care. Again, he doesn't have a really good record to run on. So then he immediately pivoted to the importance of talking about mental health. And I totally agree. I'd love to have that conversation beyond just, 7 seconds during a debate. But for Jay Inslee to brag about his commitment to mental health is kind of weird, since in the state of Washington, Western State Hospital, they were decertified, and they lost $53 million a year in federal funding because of how poorly they were being run under, wait for it, Jay Inslee's watch. It was a weird brag for Inslee to do, but I imagine he throws that out there because he knows that Jake Tapper and anybody else who's there, Don Lemon, they're not going to know Dana Bash. They're not going to know specifics like that in Washington State because they don't pay attention to Washington State, and they sure as hell don't pay attention to Governor Jay Inslee. They brought him, he had this look on his face of just like, you forgot me. Ask me question, please. But he sounded like a caveman. Ask question me now, please, me lonely. I, Inslee J. I want to talk about something that is in the Seattle Times. It's a piece by Maura McDonald. She's a critic at the time. She says the ballet in Seattle has a diversity problem. And she writes in this article, currently 84% of the Pacific Northwest Ballet Company, including dancers, staff, musicians, crew, are white, as are 74% of the dancers. And then she quotes Peter Bowl, who's the artistic director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet Company. He says, I don't think we're reflecting the community around us accurately, and I think that's our goal, to look like Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. Now, by the way, he's white, that dude who just said that. So I would argue that he should probably step down and maybe give his job to someone who is just as qualified or more qualified, who comes from a community of color. But beyond that, she writes, nationwide, dancers of color, particularly those who are black or Hispanic, make up disproportionately small numbers on ballet company rosters. This is a problem, she says. And in a general sense, that is nonsense. I have absolutely no problem of anything reflecting the community. Go for it. But let's not pretend that when it doesn't, that it's a problem, quote unquote. The whole idea that anything has to reflect the community is nothing more than pandering and a virtue signal. It's telling people that I'm woke. That's all that it does. And I say that because if the entire ballet company here of the Pacific Northwest, if every single one of them, every single dancer, every single staff member, every single member of the crew, all the musicians, if every single one of the members of the Pacific Northwest Ballet Company were African American, would Moira McDonald or anybody at the time say we have a diversity problem? Would anyone stand up and say, whoa, 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 we have a disproportionately high number of African Americans as part of the ballet, or we have a disproportionately high number of Asians or Hispanics or whatever? Would they say this is a problem? Would they say, whoa, we've got way too many Latinos, we got to get rid of some? No, of course not. And yet they say that when there is a high number of white people for a variety of reasons. Now, if there's some kind of racism that's going on that's keeping people out, then yes, it is a problem. But that's not what they're alleging here. There's no indication that that's what's happening all across the country in this. None whatsoever. We hear the same argument essentially that's being raised here about cops or firefighters or paramedics. That they're overwhelmingly white in a black neighborhood and it doesn't look like the neighborhood and that's a problem. Is that a problem? So you're telling me that if we're looking at firefighters who are overwhelmingly white, they're not good enough at putting out fires in a neighborhood that is primarily African-American or Latino or Asian? That the white firefighter who goes into the international district is not going to do a good job, that you need someone who is reflective of that community? They're going to do a better job, really? How about you hire the person who can best perform the duty of a firefighter? And I'm not going to dismiss the cops, the firefighters, the paramedics, and pretend that they don't do a good enough job when they're serving a community member that doesn't look like them. I don't need, for example, if my apartment's on fire, I don't need a white, gay, Jewish firefighter to put out the fire. When I call 911 because an Antifa thug punches me in the face upset about what I wrote about them on KTTH.com, I don't need a Jewish police officer to help me. I need the officer or the firefighter or the paramedic to be really, really good and well-trained at what they do. I do not care about their background, not even a little bit. So when we have these conversations about how, oh, we've got a problem, do we have a problem or do you want a virtue signal? Do we really have a problem? And then finally, I want to call your attention, since we're talking about police officers in passing here. I purchased a Glassy Baby, which is one of those, it's the glass container that you put the little tea light things in, the candles. You never heard of Glassy Baby?
No idea.
Oh, jeez. Everyone else has heard of Glassy Baby. People know these
You're
things.
So
it's local.
Woke.
No, it's local. So I bought one in support of the SPD Honor Guard. It was a fundraiser for them. And this is part of the Seattle Police Foundation. And I was able to purchase, because I'm a big supporter of the SPD, so I got the internal link to buy it. And I posted a photo of it on Twitter and on Facebook. And a lot of people were like, where do I get one? Well, the good news is they've got three versions of this out right now for anyone to purchase. So it's now open to the public. If you text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link so you can buy the Glassy Babies and support the SPD Honor Guard. Again, all of the money goes directly to them. It's a tax write-off, and it's a very, very cool product that allows you to show your support of police officers within the SPD. And in this city, they don't get nearly enough support than they deserve. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. I'll go ahead and send you a link so you can purchase one. Make sure you tell them that we sent you. It's Jason Rand Show.